thing as he needs to. Our next public hearing is a subdivision 2008-8 Vesco LLC and conditional use number 1794 Vesco LLC.
Now, the first application is subdivision number 2008-8, and it's to consider the subdivision of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district in Indian River 100, Sussex County, dividing 162.95 acres into 183 lots in a cluster development. Located east of Route 277, also known as Robinsonville Road, 400 feet south of Route 287, also known as Kendall Road. The second application is conditional use 1794. The application to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for multifamily dwelling structures, proposing 30 units in association with the previously referenced 183 lot cluster subdivision, be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, containing 162.95 acres, more or less, lying east of Route 277, also known as Robinsonville Road, 400 feet south of Route 287, also known as Kendall Road. The purpose of reading both is that the applicants have requested that they give a joint presentation. The application would be voted on separately. When they're voted on, it will be given two different decisions. For the record, on May 18th of 2008, there was a technical advisory review. Comments were received. We received a plus response on March 27th of 2008. The county development report was March 27th of 2009. Plus response to the applicant's response to the plus comments. We received on April 30th of 2008. A letter requesting that this application or these applications be heard on one presentation but acted on separately was received on September 28th of 2009. As were the exhibit booklet, the phase one environmental site assessment that was provided by Envirotech, and revised preliminary plans were received also on September 28th of 2009. The reference exhibit booklet is a 2-inch, 3-ring binder. All the commissioners have copies, and they have been a part of the record. The environmental assessment, there is one copy provided, and that is this 1.5-inch document, spiral bound. That is also a part of the record. And with that, gentlemen, that's all I have at this time.
All right, so we thank you. The chair recognizes Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, sir. For the benefit of the record, my name is Dennis Schrader, and I represent the applicant this evening in this matter. Thank you for consolidating the applications. I think it will make the matter go just a little bit quicker than usual. I have with me this evening Mr. Daniels, who is the manager member of the Vesco LLC, which is the applicant. I have Mr. Ford, whom you know from Land Design, and I have a young man with me by the name of Wes Allen from Envirotech, who, Mr. Chairman, you should recognize as the grandson of your predecessor.
Well, we won't hold that against you.
Is that his credentials, Mr. Chairman?
That's credentials enough for me. I can tell you that. That's credentials enough for me.
You know, the interesting thing about that is, Mr. Chairman, someday maybe somebody will be doing the same thing with our grandchildren.
What a scary thought.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Gentlemen, as Mr. Lank has pointed out to you, we have submitted to you an exhibit book that contains all of the relevant documentation that you need. However, there was one omission at the time of submittal. This goes in tab 12 and should be page 2. And I know the chair doesn't like and the rules don't permit submittals more than 10 days or after 10 days in advance of the hearing. But I think you'll find that it is one of the larger exhibits that we're going to show, and it's just simply a repetition and will help you understand the application.
Fair enough. Pass them down.
Tab 12, page 2.
Where do you want it?
It's tab 12, page 2.
Does that mean it comes after the gray thing?
Tab 12.
And as you know, Mr. Chairman, we're trying to put 500,000 square feet of commercial property on 2 acres of wetlands with no buffers, and we don't understand why nobody is here to oppose it.
I think you're pretty brave to come back here, frankly.
I hope to give it a break after tonight.
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Gentlemen, this is the application of Vesco LLC for the development property called Love Creek Landing. It is a subdivision located on Robinsonville Road at the end of Love Creek. The location is about 400 feet south of Kendale Road, and it does involve simply one parcel. If this total acreage were to be approved as applied for as a cluster subdivision and with the granting of the conditional use, we would be looking at the development of 162 acres that would be divided up with 43.3 acres in lots. We would have multifamily, we would have 1.16 acres, 14 acres plus or minus in streets, and about 103 acres in open space. The property is currently zoned AR1 Agricultural Residential District. We are not asking for that to be changed. The property is currently undeveloped and was previously the site of a facility known as the Sussex Lumber Company. With the conditional use and the multifamily district, if everything were granted as we have applied for it, we would still be looking, or we would be looking at a density of 1.37 acre units per acre, which is less than the 2.178 dwelling units per acre, which is permitted. It is in an environmentally sensitive developing area, so we do have some additional exhibits to address those requirements, and has been characterized as being an estate strategies for spending map level 4, but it is surrounded by 3, and we attribute that 4 designation to the 0.28 acres, that's just a hair more than a quarter of an acre, of a remediation site that is on this property that has been remediated from the prior Sussex lumber use. If granted, there will be private streets. Tom will testify to in a few minutes, there are a number of opportunities for this site to be served by sanitary waste disposal. I don't know, Mr. Link, I didn't hear you say, did the letter come down from the third floor from Sussex County Engineering Department?
Yeah, I forgot. Came in, it was here when I came back after 4:30.
This area, and I'll quickly skip to this, and that is that this area is in the service area that was a part of the Wandendale Wastewater Treatment Plant facility that was granted last year. One of the conditions was that Tidewater cannot serve certain study areas of Sussex County Engineering Department without the consent of County Engineering Department. It's my understanding, if that letter reads as it should, that the County Engineering Department has consented to Tidewater serving.
And if I may interrupt you for a second, they did come in after working hours today. The site is located in the angle in that planting area. Ordinance 38 construction will not be required. There are no system connection charge credits. The proposed project is to be developed using a central community on-site wastewater system. There is no capacity for sanitary sewer district from the county at this time. Conformity to the North Coast Area Planning Study will be required. In additional comments, the proposed project is in the environmentally sensitive developing zone of the Angola Neck planning area. County plans to serve the area within the Angola Neck Sanitary Sewer District, but does not expect to provide service to the parcel before 2010. The project proposes to develop using a private central community wastewater system. We recommend that wastewater system be operated under a long-term contract with a capable wastewater utility that meets TMDL limits for Delaware and Inland Bates. In addition, we recommend they have a wastewater utility provider prior to approving the project. County requires design and construction of the collection and transmission system to meet county sewer standards and specifications. The county engineering department requires that a sewer concept plan be submitted for review and approval prior to construction plan approval. A review and approval of the treatment and disposal system by the county engineering department is also required, and plan review fees may apply. Disposal field should not be counted as open space. Wastewater disposal field should be clearly identified on recorded plots and separated from lot area. These comments are based on preliminary site plan showing on-site treatment and disposal. The project would be required to connect to the Angola Neck Sanitary Sewer District if there is a change to off-site treatment or disposal. If the county ever provides sewer service and the project has a CPCN, it is recommended that the treatment system be abandoned and a direct connection made to the county system at the developer's and or owner's expense. If county ever provides sewer service and the project does not have a CPCN, it is required that the treatment system be abandoned and a direct connection made to the county system at the developer or owner's expense. In accordance with the previously provided comments, the above comments are valid for a 2-year period ending May 13th of 2010. And that concept plan is required. That's signed by Rob Davis on behalf of John Ashman, Director of Utility Planning. And that was in reference to the conditional use. And I have a copy for you. As I said, I got it after 4:30. It doesn't make any reference to the Wandendale project.
Well, Mr. Ford will describe his conversations with Mr. Izzo, and I will confirm before he says them, because I had the same conversation with Mr. Izzo, and that is that the county was going to allow Tidewater to serve because it had no immediate plans to serve the area. However, the worst possible scenario would be that neither the county or Tidewater would serve. In that case, we'd have our own on-site central system, which is what I believe Mr. Davis referred to.
That's correct. That's what it looks like. The plan shows. That's why I don't know.
Yeah. Curiously enough, they don't have any long-term plans to serve the site, but they expect to be available by 2010, which I think is about 3 months from now.
Oh, well. Work cut out for me. Uh-huh. I got to get easements down to here by 2010.
There will be water provided also by Tidewater. And there are some delineated wetlands on site. We have submitted to you location maps, a number of exhibits that will help illuminate the application for you. I draw your attention in particular to the tab number one, which is the executive summary of all of the items that are contained in here. And Mr. Johnson, tab number two contains the plus analysis, the report, the plus response. And I will publicly state that, as you know and I know, the format of plus comment and response is something that you favor. The gentleman who was the first person to originate that is Mr. Ford, and I'd like to publicly acknowledge that tonight. And I will turn the floor over to Mr. Ford.
Mr. Chairman, if I had just could one question, Mr. Schrader.
Sure.
For the record and for my benefit, I've heard this question asked. It's a subdivision on 162.95 acres with a conditional use, at least it was advertised, for the same acreage. Explain to me how they interrelate, I guess.
There is one project, 162 acres with the subdivision. This is the conditional use site.
Okay.
Same property.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear from the site plan. I'm just wondering why the conditional use wasn't called out as the smaller portion, or why it didn't go for an RPC or something along those lines. Just
perhaps Mr. Ford can help you with that.
Just curious. I mean,
yeah.
Thanks.
Tom Ford, Land Design, Ocean View, land planning firm for this particular project. The RPC option would have created larger lots than what we have here. It probably wouldn't have impacted our density in obtaining the numbers of lots that we wanted, but it certainly would have impacted woodlands and so forth. And if I can go through my presentation, I'll tell you how that we even came about to the conditional use portion, which really was after the plus comments were sifted through, and when we submitted this application, this is what Connie Holland's office was submitted with, along with the responses. And then the county received her comments thereafter. The I'm going to turn this for the benefit of the those in the audience. Just the location of the site, and because it is deemed a level four, I thought it was necessary to just give an idea of where it was situated. It is on Robinsonville Road, which connects up to Plantation and John Williams, or Route 24. Route 9, Route 24, Route 1 are all pretty well within range of this site. This is a 3-mile radius to indicate some of the infrastructure and services that are available. The BB Medical Campus, Route 24 Health Center is located in this vicinity. We have the Beacon Middle School. We have the Lewis and Rehoboth Fire Station number 3, which is 1.3 miles away from the site. There is a back exit onto Robinsonville Road. Troop 7 and the Route 1 commercial corridor is all within that 3-mile range. Sites to the north, to the east, and to the south are all in level 3. Connie and her letter to us basically was unsure why it was labeled level 4, but she contributes it to it being in the agricultural preservation district, which it is. The agreement expires February 15th, 2010. So that's 4 months from today. Given the time it takes to engineer and go through the process, will be well beyond the expiration of that before a subdivision could be recorded. That was brought up at the PLUS process and discussed with the Department of Agriculture and so forth. And it is part of the presentation and in the booklet. This this particular site has its unique qualities to it in that it has a varying degree of woodland in sequence. Some of it mature, some of it emergent regrowth, some of it I call stabilized clearing. In your book, there is a photo essay. If you turn to tab 1, page 4, the site's comprised of a variety of landforms and characteristics and features, such as a farm field. It has wetlands, and it has the varying woodland growth. The farm field takes up about 9% of the land and is in and adjacent to the Robinsonville Road. The back portion of the site has the Love Creek headwaters running actively through this area, but there's also a tributary that swings and hooks around the site and in through the mature or semi-mature growth that's on the site. There's been a lot of lumbering, timbering through the history of this site. We did conduct a phase 1 on it, and it is part of the submission that was given to Lawrence. We didn't burden the book by encompassing this entire manual. But the important aspects of this book are contained in our booklet here, and I'll get to that. If we turn to page 5 of the tab 1, is a photo essay. And you have photo 1, which was taken out on Robinsonville Road. It shows that pastoral farmland, and about 600 feet back is the beginning of the tree line. In the photo of page 2, it's taken inside
a nicely contoured landform in here where the beginning of that tributary begins to come around, wrap around the site, and come into the Love Creek.
On this particular site, there's about 1 mile of linear feet in state wetlands, and there's about 1.3 miles of 404 lands. And the amount of 404 and wetlands takes up about 6% of the entire site, or close to 10 acres. In that edged area are the mature or semi-mature growth, and part of the site planning was to stay out of that area and work with that. As you can see in photo 3, it's up in the more emergent regrowth area. Photo 4 is showing where the this is predominantly deciduous. In photo 4, predominantly evergreen. So it does vary. In photo 5, you're looking out through the riparian area onto the Love Creek. Photo 6 shows a location for wells, sites that we have been conducting and monitoring for over 2 years in relationship to the on-site disposal and soils feasibility. Photo 7 is showing that particular part of the site that has been recently cleared and is now stabilized and regrowing back. Photo 8, you have a logging road. Photo 9 is again another shot of the restabilization area, but it has brush piles and so forth. So when considering the comments that you got from PLUS, I'd like you to consider the nature and disturbance of the property along many decades of use. In the EnviroTech report, it gives a little bit of the history of the site, that Sussex Lumber and Vessels back in 1958 through 1975 ran a wood treatment and lumber yard there. In 1958, they were treating the wood, and there was a condensation pond where the concentration of that treatment would settle. That's the area that needed the remediation. All the wood and treatment operations ceased in 1975. In the 90s, it was recognized that there was a portion of the site that needed to be addressed. And it contains a quarter of an acre, and that quarter of an acre is identified on the plan at the edge of this woodland area here. It is not being touched with any roads or buildings or any structures in accordance to the restrictions that have been placed on this land. In 2006, DNREC issued a letter of no further action on the remedial site. The soils have been removed, they've been solidified, and it's been capped. There's also a sign out there that identifies this site and is part of the restrictions on the site. There's letters in your booklet past the first division of tab one that is just some excerpts from this phase one study that shows correspondence between DNREC and the issues that we just described. Also under the next division of table one, there's an additional letter to Cave Associates, who were the engineers at the time, monitoring the well and remediation process. In the PLUS process, on tab two, we have a letter from Connie Hollum. And she states that although the parcel is within the environmentally sensitive developing area, the presence of level 4 on the site indicates that something about the site would cause us concern should it be developed. It appears that that may be because the parcel is subject to the agricultural land preservation. And again, that does expire in 4 months. The other important aspect of it is obviously the state will not financially support a development in level 4. The developer is fully aware that he will bear the expense of any infrastructure improvements and so forth that's necessary on this site. But she did say that she understands the parcel has been developed on three sides, and the state appreciates the efforts that the developer has taken to protect the environment, including the 100-foot buffer and 60% forest conservation. After tab two in the first divide are the plus comments and response to this. And I'll just run quickly through a few things that, because it illustrates we've made changes to the plan that we initially had put forth to them at the meeting. In DelDOT, they wanted the dedication along the Robinsonville Road. We would comply with that, a multi-use path, and they wanted interconnectivity with the site to the south in the level three. So we've opened up lots here. We've allowed for interconnectivity in two areas off of the road so that that is a potential for the future. The DNREC basically was looking for volunteer stewardship. I think we exemplify the volunteer stewardship by a restrained use of density. When the site could take 325 units, we have like a 35% reduction to 213 units. The layout of the roads and the lots is a direct response to the contours and natural drainage patterns. And along with the benefit of contouring the roads into, placing the roads into contours that are existing there naturally, it'll minimize grading and it'll maximize any tree saving. In addition to that volunteer stewardship is the preservation of that riparian edge and keeping all lots and all roads and any other improvements free and clear thereof. We did remove issues from our original plan, but plus we had parking for the amenity area in here. We pushed it back out and we put it onto the as an addition to this looped area, which was also on that plan. The townhouses were this was lotted out during the initial review. State Housing Authority sought more opportunity for a variety of people to attain homes in the area. Actually, out of all the divisions, the Department of Housing was in support of the project. And so by taking out the lots that we had initially lotted here, and you will see an example of those lots in tab 12 when we get to the conditional use portion as to how we exchanged, but it did impact the trees more, and by putting in six townhomes, we have actually opened up more open space. It gives the developer an opportunity to control the architectural nature of the homes and bring a price point down that people can attain. And yet at the same time be complementary to everything else being planned. We also reduced pond sizes and we provided for detention and infiltration. These ponds were slated to be a lot bigger than they are. Right now we are looking at just the top edges of them to be wet pond areas to give a creation of its aesthetic as well as functional, that you have this sense of bridging before you enter into the woodland area. But the remaining portions will be detention areas, which will end up being green with groves and saplings themselves. A major portion of change that we made was, if you'll notice through the sites, like between lot 1 and 2, there's a space. Lot 3, 4, 5, there's a space. And every 3 to 2 lots or 4 lots, there's a space. Those spaces can be handled for bioswales, which is a very non-structural but green best management practice. We've taken a fairly extensive look at that. We think that this can be done, and we have the topography and everything else to support it. One aspect on the plus comments I do want to make mention of, and that is on page 7 of 23 of their comments, where the state made comments that we either deliberately or undeliberately tried to deceive the amount of impact and that this project would have. And if you'll look at those pages, you'll see that they're in red, page 7 and 8. It's a very extensive answer to their notion that this application was, first off, trying to deceive anyone. And at the time of the PLUS application, we stated that we would have about 24% impervious. When we actually did the calculations in very strict detail, we came up to 17.6%. So the DNREC's comments, unfortunately, do not, my response do not get, if there's people in the public who have picked up the PLUS comments, they don't get, unless they explicitly ask, for the engineer's comments or response. And if you get on the PLUS site today, you could look that up, and all it is the PLUS comments. So I think it's a little bit weighted and not balanced by not including my comments to their comments. The tab 3, you will have all the TAC comments. The letter that was read today by Lawrence is also in that, in the TAC comments. It was merely copied and sent down. Exhibit 4, or tab 4, excuse me, is the application, and during the in the application, just a quick review of the plan is we are seeking 183 lots. We are looking at 30 townhouse units, which adds to the 213. There will be central or community sewer and central water. The average lot size is greater than 10,000 square feet. The amenities we have are passive and active. There's interconnectivity. There's preservation of resources. This community we believe to be walkable, bikeable, and livable. The design does call for criteria of a forest buffer along the edge. It's a 40-foot separation with the existing forest in place. So the lot line, the closest lot line is 40 feet. It has some variance as it goes along the entire edge, but it's no less than 40 feet from the rear of the lot line. All lots will be served off of a private road and not off of Robinsonville Road, and all lots are completely outside the wetlands. The planning process is fairly well noted in the development port, which is divider number 1 of tab 4. And we are in stormwater. It's going to be quality only. The potable water will be and for fire as well will be served by Tidewater. Wastewater is the community system. It'll be operated and maintained by Tidewater. Traffic, we will comply with DLDOT stipulations concerning the roadways and entry features. There's no record of rare or endangered species on this site. They do make mention that there may be potential on other sites up and down the Love Creek. They do recommend the 100-foot buffers, and we have an average of 107-foot buffers, and I'll explain how we average that later in this presentation. The tidal and non-tidal wetlands, I stated we have no lots in the wetlands, and no plant material disturbance will be along the riparian edge with one exception, and that would be if we get the permit for a crabbing pier to go through that area. In the open space criteria, there's 102 acres that is not in lots or roads. Out of that 102 acres, we have 2.5 acres in active recreation. That includes the pool, the clubhouse, bathhouse, tennis courts, and a tot lot. There's 1.8 acres in detention areas and stormwater. There's 17.5 acres in wastewater reserve for disposal and treatment and so forth, which leaves a remaining 80 acres of other non-developed, untouched land, which is about 50% if you would remove all the other improvements to the open space. Public-private infrastructure, It will be the county roads. They will remain private. We do have Delaware Electric Co-op for electric and Verizon on telephone. We believe from an economic, recreational, and other benefit that the tax base will be increased. We will have on-site recreation. We do have a variety of housing types. The superior living environment, I would attest that this is superior to 20,000 square foot lots with only a 10-foot open space requirement. The smaller lots increase forest preservation, increase buffers, infiltration and other best management practices, our restraint in density, and our reduction of 35% of its maximum. We are looking to accommodate different housing types. And in tab 4, divider number 2 is our outline on the subdivision considerations, answering the 17 considerations that would be. There would be redundancy in going through that. We go into a lot of detail. We have addressed all 17 of those, which are the integration into the landscape, the protection of wetlands, preservation of natural environments. One of the items I do want to point out is preservation of scenic views and open space. One aspect of this site is the pastoral view of Robinsonville Road. I think in most times when you have subdivisions in front of you, many times in Sussex County, we end up with the backyards of a lot of lots right up on the road. We end up with a berm and some plantings. And so we're going to be going down corridors. This is one of those types of subdivisions that puts everything in the back. We've left adequate means for scenic quality. I know there's no regulation for it, but we're looking at superior design and conservation, and I think it plays into that, that we were sensitive to the scenic quality and neighboring character of the neighborhood. The closest rear lot line to the right-of-way will be over 170 feet. The closest, if we are approved for a townhouse unit, will also be over 170 feet, and even the tennis courts are greater than 150 feet or at 150 feet from the right-of-way. So we do have, we have kept it fairly open. We are looking at reforesting portion here, but this will all then be open in there. Other aspects of subdivision considerations I think I've already addressed. I'm willing to take questions on it if I haven't. And in tab 4, divider 3 is compliance with zoning. And what we are asking for is a permitted use in this zoning classification. We are below the density. Our lot areas are greater than the 7,500 square foot minimum. They actually average 10,334 square feet. Our minimum frontages are 60 feet, where our lots average 80 feet in width, and we comply with the depth. We're actually 10 foot bigger than the minimum depth that's required. We did provide the open space. We have addressed the streets. We do have a management of the open space space plan, and that is back at tab 11 along with covenants and conditions and so forth. And we are in compliance with the ESDDOZ, where we provided a development report and environmental assessment. In tab 5 is a series of maps that were just used for references, and we have comprehensive plan maps, we have strategies maps from the state, zoning maps, aerial maps, we have tax maps and flood maps, and anything that needed to be placed on the plan during the planning process was utilized. We have USGS maps, soils maps, but we've also had intense soils evaluations on the site. So we have in the field information in that regard, and we show even the SRA map and how it complies with the plan. Natural heritage, we had several letters with natural heritage. They're in the plan. I'll take any questions on those areas if there is any. We put the wooded area breakout that we showed you before. It's in the plan, all under tab 5. Tab 6 is the site illustrative plan that you see here. It's got the site data on page 2. It's got open space data on page 3. And on page 4 of tab 6, I would appreciate if you'd all take a look at that with me, because it is on the buffer, and it does play into the sensitivity of trying to keep lots back and not get into the buffer and protect them and preserve them. On page 4 of tab 6 is 36 dwelling units would be along the edge of the riparian area, tidal, and state wetlands. And what we did is took the center of every lot and brought it forth to not the state, but to the 404 line, which sits landward of the state. So our buffer would be increased more than what we're saying average-wise to go to the state. We did it to the 404 line. On the next page, page 5 is a detail of how we did that. And on page 5, if you'll look up in the right-hand corner and see lot 26, and lot 26, center line to the 404 line. Lot 25, the same. We skip lot 24 and we go to lot 23. It would be disingenuous for us to use lot 24 when lot 23 and lot 25. So we're not trying to, we took a very conservative approach to the average of this. And that follows through, if you'll follow it all the way down to lot 19. And then at lot 18 through 11, even though we probably could put a line there, it would throw that average way out of whack, and it would certainly be in our favor to do so. So we did not include those lots, and that's true. If you look at page 4, you have the overall look, and then page 5 just gives you a detail that I think we took a very, there is no guideline in doing this, and there is no regulation to set it back. So we do have a varying width, and a lot of that varying width comes from this mature forest that we located out in the field and stayed out of it. So it, a lot of this kind of goes together in putting forth a conservation design. The next page of tab 6 is page 6. It shows the site amenities on the right-hand side, which is the Love Creek. We are going to seek a crabbing pier, the pool, the clubhouse, the bathhouse. On the Robinsonville roadside, we're going to be looking at a tot lot and tennis courts. There's also going to be multi-use path and so forth. Over to the left, there is text, and it's called amenity phasing. And we figured we'd put that forth at the preliminary point where we will be seeking the crabbing pier right up front when we start construction on this project. But not until the 50th lot goes to settlement will we not start the swimming pool, bathhouse, and so forth. At the same time, once the pool is nearing completion, the tot lot and tennis court would also be done. So on the 50th lot, which is about 23% of the project, we would be moving forward with all the amenities for this project. Tab 7 is a stormwater management approach. I'd like to just highlight 4 items, is that we are going to be seeking numerous bioswales throughout this project. We feel like that is the most non-structural and appropriate method, but there are areas that have natural infiltration. We will be using them. We will create grass filter strips as well as forest strips, and we will have a detention pond with a minimum wet pond just to, for an aesthetic as we come in the entryway. The next page on tab 7 merely indicates graphically all the different BMPs and where they're going to go on the site for this particular project. traffic and site circulations, tab 8. The Robinson Road entry and the roadway improvements along it will be as per DELDOT. Page 2 is a detail of all the different road cross sections, type 1 and type 2, and they will be in concurrence with the new Sussex County private road and street standards. There is, on page 3 of tab 8, is a map that shows where type 1 and type 2 roads would occur by shading and clear. I want to make mention that we have 2.72 miles of roadway, and that's including the travelway for the conditional use that we're anticipating on this project. The next page addresses pedestrian concerns, and it's page 4 of tab 8. And there will be 5-foot concrete roadside sidewalks. There'll be greater than 4 miles of sidewalks on this project. There'll be greater than 1 mile of multi-use paths on this project, and that does include multi-use paths that are put in by the developer inside the development, as well as the multi-use path along the roadside by DelDOT. So we believe, together with 5 miles of pedestrian use undetermined, but there will be trails and paths through the woods for foot traffic as they traverse through the project, but they're not improved. The other 5 miles is improved hard surface with handicap provisions and so forth. Page 5 is just the street names, and page 6 of tab 8 shows that the assessment division has approved those street names. Tab 9 has to do with the detailed soils feasibility study. We did hire Atlantic Resource Management to conduct that. They have found these soils to be some of the best soils that they have come across in this area. We have also monitored with 9 wells for seasonal highs and fluctuations for any hydro geotechnical work that's going to need to be done on them. And again, they also support the same result after 2 years. And you know that this year has been a heavily rained season, and these soils, the results of these soils are extremely promising and well-suited for the intention of what we have. Sewer availability, this is one of those questions we thought we would get from. We did meet with Sussex County. We were under the understanding and thought we'd have a letter here today that addressed specifically the topic I'm about to open, and that is that Sussex County would like to, if available and reasonable for this area when it comes, serve it. But they also recognize that it is at the top of the Angola Neck, given the environment and who knows the future of development in the area, that it may not be feasible. And they indicated that they would entertain a tidewater request to provide sewer for this site in the event that that happens. So in a way, I feel like, yes, we have the soils for central system. We do have 2 other options that may come about in the period of us coming from a preliminary, hopefully, approval to the engineering of the actual. Letters of willing and able are on tab 10. Tidewater, willing and able to provide water as well as treatment plant service to a central system, Delaware Electric Co-op, Verizon, and MediaCom. Tab 11 is basically your declarations and conditions, but I'd like you to go to divide 1 of tab 11. It's several pages down, like 20 or so pages, and it does address the open management plan, open space management plan. Tab 2 is the actual agricultural divider 2 of tab 11. Is the actual agreement with the Agricultural Preservation District agreement. It also includes the letter by the owner to the department that they will not extend their 10-year commitment and that it will expire on February 15, 2010. Divider 3 of tab 11 are declaration of restrictions that were put forth by DNREC for the remedial area, and those are included in their entirety. And I will then conclude my presentation on the subdivision portion of it, unless you want me to go with the CU. The conditional use is tab 12. We made an application for 30 multifamily, and you do have a site plan blow up. It's not different than what you've seen throughout. It just simply blows up this area here for ease of looking at it. The we believe it is in compliance with zoning as far as density and permitted uses under a CU. Does provide for the open space, and the streets in this particular instance would have to be a travel way that would be 24 foot wide as opposed to your private streets. The management of the open space and so forth is also included. We believe it's in compliance with ESDDOZ, and I would like to show you near the end of the booklet, two dividers in, is a plan that was presented to PLUS at the time that showed that particular area lotted out. And there is a little disparity in the count. And that lot count there was for 26. But with the notion of putting this into a multifamily, we popped a few lots out to open up other areas inside, and so we lost a few lots in here. We lost four lots, and we picked up those lots with 30 here. So it was a straight trade-off. The number never changed from 213, which what the application was originally made out to be. But it does show you the option with the lots that could be done in that area. It does take up more space. It does infringe on some of the woodland area that the condo units would not infringe on. So we feel like there's a better benefit, and it serves many purposes with the CU as far as making homes attainable to those who make less money and yet still want a quality development to live in. I'm complete with mine.
If you'll share with me for a minute, we'll get to just a couple of housekeeping points. First off, although Tom didn't mention it, we do have contained in tab 2 a student enrollment analysis from for the Cape and Lupin School District, which showed what the effect would be on the school district. The other thing I wanted to point out quickly is that the remediation site, which constitutes the 0.28 acres, is roughly located in this area, and this will be for the benefit of Mr. Robertson. As Tom has pointed out, there is a separate covenant that applies to that, and that covenant was imposed by DNREC as a part of the remediation with the vessels company that operated the lumber facility that was there. And it says that that particular site cannot be used for any residential purposes, but it can be used for non-residential purposes. In effect, we're not going to use it for any purposes, as Tom has said. So that covenant, along with the covenants and conditions that have been submitted to you for your review and approval and comment, overlap each other a little bit. But that site is often, I think, designated on some of these plans is a poor soils area, which is a euphemism for a site that's been cleaned up. Yep. One of the questions that has come up in a couple of the applications I've recently presented to the county, not necessarily cluster subdivisions, but in other situations, is what is the ultimate yield for this property if it weren't going to be what you proposed to have your applicant get from the commission or the council? And in this case, while we're looking for 213 units, if this were a straight subdivision, you took the 162 acres, took 25% off, and took it in at 2.1, we'd be somewhere between 250 and 260 units on this particular site as single-family dwellings. So we're below that by a significant number. And we do have the issue of the conditional use for your separate consideration. But I think the purpose in telling you that is that as you go through the requirements of 115-25, which take us into the cluster subdivision and the seven criterion that are set out, or criteria that are set out there, and the considerations to be given for superior design and whatnot, this demonstrates for you that you can actually use a site not as a standard subdivision, but take the standard or the cluster subdivision, create smaller lot sizes, preserve a lot of the features that are natural there, and come up with something that's fairly attractive and perhaps less intrusive to the surrounding areas along Robinsonville Road. The last thing that I'd like to point out to you is, and I believe Tom has also mentioned this, in each of the two tabs at the end, we have provided you with proposed findings of fact and conditions of approval to give you some working document from which to base your decision should you choose to favor us with affirmative action. With those thoughts in mind, Mr. Daniels, as the owner, Mr. Ford, Mr. Allen, and myself are available to answer all your questions concerning the presentation we've made this evening.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if anyone has any questions for you, and we'll start with Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For my own clarification, you're applying for 213 units.
213 total units.
Total units.
30 multi, the rest single family.
So are you saying then that if we were not in favor of the townhouses or the condominiums, that then you're only applying for 183 single family homes?
Well, that certainly is the way the preliminary site plan is before you tonight under the cluster subdivision.
Okay, so if we were not in favor of the conditional use for the townhouses, you're not proposing to put in those 26 units, housing units?
I don't think they can. That's not how it's been advertised. I mean, they're...
Yeah, I don't think we can either.
At least under this,
you have to come back
pending.
To phase two.
We might like to do that, and we might be back quickly, but I'm not sure we can do it on the strength of this application.
That's why I'm asking for the clarification on that point, because... frankly, as I've looked at the materials that have been presented to us, I've been very impressed with the efforts that have been taken to protect the environment, to provide the additional buffers far in excess of what you're required to do with a 404, and I truly appreciate that, and the unique designs that have been put into it. But as I look at this project, including the townhouses, I look at that as a sore thumb that sticks out. That's throbbing, is how I would characterize it. Not that I've made I'm making a motion or anything at this point, but I'm just characterizing how I view that in relationship to the rest of it because of all the efforts that have been made to preserve the natural areas, to protect the environment, et cetera, given that this is obviously a very sensitive environmental area. With that little editorial, just for clarification, as I looked at the materials, and you talk about the setbacks from the 404 wetlands, it appears that the minimum setback that you have is lot number 40, which is 42 feet.
That's correct.
Okay.
Everything else is greater than that.
And again, I truly appreciate that. With the remediated area, is there any kind of fencing or any kind of way of denoting or separating that from that would warn the residents or the kids that are in the area?
Well, there is a sign on site, but I think you also should note, I believe it's a letter from Cabe Associates that investigated the site after the remediation and said it was clear.
Mm. So was this like creosote or was this
arsenic? Mm. Arsenic and...
Mr. Allen, you're going to have to come up and give us your name, sir, if you're going to testify.
Name is Wes Allen with Envirotech Environmental Consulting Incorporated. The site was associated with a lumber treatment, creosote. So it's salts and arsenic and associated metals used in the process.
And as I understood in the presentation, that soil has been removed and then it's been capped.
Correct.
Okay. Let's go to the multifamily houses, my sore thumb. Where would you say is the closest area that has townhouses or condominiums?
You know?
Plantations.
So Plantations or Long Neck Road, perhaps Baywoods, I think. My point is that in the surrounding area, there are not any other townhouse projects or condominium projects.
I got to believe that there are some closer than the Plantations, Mr. Johnson, but I'm not prepared to answer.
Well, when I rode around the countryside and when I had nothing better to do, I didn't see any myself.
Sorry, Mr. Johnson, I'm not familiar with everything, but I believe that there's an approved development here that Caldera worked for over 55, and there are townhouses in that area.
I'll answer your question. There's none physically built.
No, there's none physically.
I don't know if that was a question or not.
That's why I guess I didn't see any, because there haven't been any built yet.
What they now call Coastal Club, which was a marine farm, had a mix because it was RPC.
Okay.
That would probably be the closest. Like Plantations, the west side of a Plantation Road would probably be the closest active site.
Okay. But in, like I say, in the immediate vicinity, there's not any currently any condominiums or townhouses. Again, which kind of it's a sore thumb idea. And I believe, given the thoroughness of the presentation and presentation materials that were presented to us ahead of time, I don't have any more questions at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, sir. We thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what questions I have would be brief. Very comprehensive exhibit book, Mr. Ford. I enjoyed reading detail your responses to the plus comments, particularly about impervious cover calculations. I'm interested in hearing what the public has to say.
Mm-hmm.
Hunting activities nearby notice would be incorporated or is incorporated into the
certainly it could be
documents.
In fact, if you take a look at one of the pictures, you'll see a deer stand on that.
Yeah, picture
on the creek. We're going to get rid of that. It's in the wetlands.
As an attorney, perhaps you should wear orange if you go out there to dispose of it, not camouflage.
Mr. Smith, I've spent a couple nights here where I feel like I'd like to rather wear camouflage than orange.
No, that's if you're walking the streets of Lewis.
That's on your vehicle.
Kevlar.
Yeah, I'd have a little Kevlar underneath, too, if I were you.
Absolutely.
The well monitoring... I believe that, for the soils and the water table, I believe you said it was 2 years or in excess of 2 years. Was that because of the association with the arsenic, or is that just...
No, that two different monitoring things that happened. That was prior to us having the site. That was done through the late 90s, and that's why in 2006, DNRC, and Wesley, you probably could answer that better than I, on the arsenic monitoring. And then I'll explain the other monitoring.
The arsenic monitoring wells were put in place after 1997, the initial cleanup. They're left in place till 2005, and in 2006, Deneric determined those monitoring wells are no longer necessary as they had a non-detect level of arsenic. So those wells were stopped, were not monitored after that point, and they were abandoned in 2008 and removed.
Thank you.
The other wells,
Mr. Smith, were conducted for the disposal areas for the waste treatment. And there were 9 wells involved. Oftentimes you can go in and still have reasonable soils and depth, but after hydrogeological studies, you need to make sure of that. And that's why the monitoring wells were in. And those wells proved to stay reasonably low, that they would not anticipate any hydro breaking out of the system as it's being fully loaded and so forth. It's fairly intensive. Upon approval of a preliminary, we will get into more intensive studies for the soils.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Leif Erickson of Atlantic Resource Management. His findings had concluded you had a lot of good soils, and the soil characteristics by and large were sandy loams. There was one that does have, I think is Eavesboro, has a higher slope. But speak to me about the Manahawkin muck, which is described as frequently flooded.
I believe that type of soil is not in our disposal area, but I wouldn't be able to put that right on the table here right now. But I think the
state and so forth talks about those soils being out in that riparian area, not in the disposal area.
Okay. The disposal area is about 17 acres. The riparian area is about 26 acres. That is being left. So in that riparian area is your more dense soils and so forth that would not be suitable for disposal for wastewater.
And who knows about the barking tree frog? It'd be Mr. Allen?
Not I.
I believe they're out of season right now, sir.
We did the well delineation, the phase one, and the operation maintenance plan.
Sir, if you're going to testify, you need to come up. Grandfather would have a fit if he would.
We did not do any work on the barking tree frog. We were hired to do the phase one assessment. We also did the wetland delineation, and we did the operation and maintenance plan for the former serve site.
It's contained in Ms. Stetsner's letter as a rare occurrence statewide, fewer than 5 occurrences, I guess. I was hoping to learn something tonight.
We would like to be able to help you, but we believe that our letter listed a number of species that don't necessarily exist on this site, but potentially may exist. Right.
Seems to.
I will tell you that I believe between the three of us and Mr. Daniels, we're not aware of the existence of that critter on this particular site.
But then the logic could go around in that regards to Mr. Johnson's question about proximity to townhouses, that there are townhouses nearby that are 2 miles away. So I put that back to you. That's all the questions I have, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I'm not sure where the barking tree frog. I've gone through this booklet myself many times. I didn't come across that. But in the natural heritage, she also mentioned a lot of plants and a lot of things. And we researched every single plant that she did have in there and the cultural requirements and habitat. We also went out on site and took pictures of a specific area that she had some concerns on. And because of all the timbering operations and so forth, there's nothing on that site that she has mentioned in her heritage, and the particular plants she's mentioned need full sun, they're different habitat, and where she was saying they're located, we didn't see them on our site. So.
Mr. Smith, could you pronounce the scientific name for the barking tree frog for the benefit of the record?
I'll give it a try after Mr. Ross.
don't ask him.
Now look, I don't want you making fun of that barking tree frog. I have a pet one at home, as a matter of fact.
Really?
We call him Rover. Yeah. Okay, you're next.
In my younger days, I think I was maybe still in high school and not quite legal, but I think we were stuck in the muck and we thought we saw one of those frogs up a tree, but not sure what exactly we were doing wrong at the time.
yes, sir.
Only Mr. Smith could bring up such a thing. You know, Mike, I think the Poe people got to live somewhere, you know. I mean, I was impressed. I was impressed by the
by the lack of greed, I guess. You could have put more units, you could have stuck things here and stuck things there, and you didn't. And I like the idea of it being set off the road a good distance, and I like the idea of the multi-family units being kind of segregated from the other. So the poor people do got to live somewhere. Reforestation, there's quite a bit of reforestation. What do you have any idea? Are you going to be planting hardwoods, predominantly hardwoods, mixed hardwoods in there?
We'd work with state forestry. We'd ask them for their recommendations. It'd be all indigenous material. It'd probably be a mixture of evergreen and deciduous material.
Amongst the other hats I wear, I actually have a certified tree farm, believe it or not. So, and, you know, I would recommend, since most likely it's not going to be forested for timber, maybe ever again, that, you know, you focus on, you know, on hardwood trees and hardwood tree varieties, because they take a little longer to grow, but they're a little more durable and they're a little less prone to getting some different beetles and bugs and stuff, as they tend to fall down and get struck by lightning. So, no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, sir. Delay.
Just to expand upon that statement about the reforestation, the state forests are going to recommend you use native species trees. No questions.
Okay. Council?
No questions. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I have another question, if I might.
Yes, sir.
Concerning the wastewater disposal field and the community wastewater treatment facility, what would be your intention to use that those segments of the property if you did, whether you were connected to the county or the Tidewater?
Future. Right. We would not be seeking to come back looking for development of those lands. They would remain an open space.
So they'd become part of your open space plan?
Yes, yes, it would.
Okay. And back to the sore thumb, sorry, condominiums. Is that going to be treated as, if all that was approved, would that be treated as a separate entity in and of itself? Because I noticed that you had, you know, the condominium rules. You know, would they be part of this overall community, or are they going to be?
They would be made a part of the overall community. The problem is that when you go into common ownership, we have to use a different structure for the imposition of covenants and conditions. And so we have to use a code of regulations for condo, restrictive covenants for single-family lots. And that's why you have that dual play in here from a legal point of view. The idea would be to make both belong to the same. There are items that are common to all of the projects, such as the recreation area, that would become a part of an overall umbrella association. When you get to the condominium, you have common elements that go within that that are different, that would require a separate structure for their maintenance, such as the exterior of the structures, the roofs, what have you. So we have slightly different legal issues, slightly different ownership rights. The idea is to get them to support all of the common things that belong to both projects. We have to.
Short answer is that they're all part of the same development.
The short answer is yes and no at the same time, because they have to be segregated,
right,
because of the separate ownership format.
Right, because of the way that the legal structure of that.
Mr. Johnson, if I may add too on the condominiums, because I know I debated this with the developer. When we look at it, they're going to be smaller units. It's not these condominiums, and maybe Mr. Mike Daniels can answer that if you have any specifics on it, but if we were the lots, there'd be 26 homes there, according to the original plan. Now there's going to be 6 buildings. Yes, the buildings will be larger, but if they are built with an architectural craftsman style, they could be very becoming, and most of the units, there's 2 6 units, there's no 8 unit. We tried to keep them small, so there's 2 large, I think 6 units, and then the rest are 4 units. I might have 3 and 3. There's 3 6 units and 3 4 units. So with the reforestation and with a architectural design on the buildings, I think that they can be appealing and fit in.
Thank you.
I got another question related to that. Several times you stated townhouses. Several times you stated condominiums.
We're looking at townhomes.
Townhome design condominiums.
It would be in a condominium ownership, the townhomes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Condominium style, townhouse designs.
Yes.
can't apply for townhouses under conditional use.
But you can apply for multifamily dwellings, which we have.
Multifamily dwellings, which you're applying for, yeah.
Anyone else?
It's like a town, but it's not a town.
All right, gentlemen, if you would take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2008-8 and or conditional use number 1794, Fesco LLC? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2008-8 or conditional use number 1794? Okay, we'll start with the lady over here on the orange. Salmon, whatever color we're calling that these days.
Hi, I'm Mrs. Street, Sarah Street. Thanks for letting me speak.
You're certainly welcome.
The opposite side of Robinsonville Road has been in the Street family probably since the early 1900s. And thank you for the scenic view, because that's why I love it there. I love the scenic view. It's true. But with a development like this, Robinsonville Road is severely congested. It's extremely, extremely congested. Safety is a factor for myself, for my family, is one thing. Two, we've never seen water treatment signs posted anywhere. The water is so bad that we don't drink it. I take care of an Alzheimer's grandparent. I don't want her to drink it. It's that bad. I've not had it tested. It just looks like a cloud, so we just don't even deal with it. The deer, if you notice on Route 24, they cut down both sides of 24. The deer really have nowhere to go but the family farm we've had that's been in the family. So that deforestation on that curve will be packed with deer. To me, that's another safety factor. There's wetlands on our side of Robinsonville Road, and it sounds like they're going to do some ponds on their side of the road. In the past probably 3 years, water has set from the rain like I've never seen before. I'm 33. I've never seen water sit like that before. And to put a lot of concrete on the other side of the road sounds quite hefty. That's just my opinion. And we have a lot of hunting on our side of Robinsonville Road. The community does a lot of hunting there. So those are factors to consider in this project. Thank you.
Okay, we thank you. All right, who's next? Yes, sir.
Joe Street. It's my daughter. She probably took the words out of my mouth. I might just add just a couple little things. It is a beautiful area. That's true. And Mr. Ford acknowledged that by acknowledging the view across the street, which, as my daughter said, is our property. It's about 145 acres. It's been in the family, like she said, since about the 20s. Just a little bit of history on it. One thing was always amazing to me. I think Robinsonville Road, well, it hasn't been named Robinsonville probably till about maybe the 70s, maybe 70s, mid-70s. I know when I was a kid, it was like Rabbit's Ferry. It was the closest thing we had to any kind of, which I little one-room schoolhouse I went down the road down to school in. But it was called Robinson. I think it was named after, right on our property across the road. I think it was a ship, not that it's irrelevant to this case, but I'm just giving you some history of the type of setting, type of place it is. And going back, get to what Mr. Johnson's word, sore thumb, does come to mind as far as there being townhouses or whatever. I mean, I don't know the townhouse. I'm a builder, carpenter. I still don't know the difference of townhouse, condominium, or what. But I know it's a multifamily house. That's not, And believe me, I'm in favor of helping people that affordable housing. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. But, you know, and one of the fellows mentioned a 3-mile radius. I can't think of any townhouse except maybe over on Right 1, the Wawa district. Now, you know, I live in the area. Plantations, they're beautiful. I don't see townhouses there, but I guess maybe there is, and you know, maybe they're in the back. I don't know, but that is a sore thumb to me. Living across the street for since I was a kid, since my dad was a kid, since my grandfather purchased the property. But getting back to Robinson, I think there was a man named Captain Robinson. He was a ship captain, I understand, and his main plantation, I guess I call it like a plantation house, was on our property, and it burned down, and the house that's there that now was moved by horses back, that was like a secondary house, it was in the back of the field, and it was later put up front. Just as a, giving you some kind of little bit of history of the area. But we're trying to maybe negotiate, sell like 56 acres across the road, right on that curve. As my daughter mentioned, I don't know what's going to happen as far as if we have an entrance there, what's improved. But my thought is, it's 56 acres. There's about 13 acres, I say, of wetlands. The potential buyer is going to build around those wetlands. Maybe they're just being 4 or 5. You know, I'm thinking $300,000 or $400,000 homes, nice, beautiful homes. I wouldn't mind seeing on the Fussell's property, not townhouses. I both know the more the density of the makes it more affordable for the builder. For the developer, he can't. You know, it's not feasible for him to do that. Right. But at whose expense? You know, so I would be in favor if work with the environment. I remember planting trees. I was a kid when I don't remember any hardwoods being planted there, but I remember physically planting some of the, watched my dad on tractor, physically planting pines along the road there. That was harvested probably 30, 40 years later. And I think I remember them being harvested and replanted. But just to give you an idea of what I've seen over there, I can see working with that environment, if you got to get, you know, 10 and 15, 20 houses to the whole 162 acres, that's what you got to do. But as far as there being like townhouses and as many as possible with a given amount of property, I'm certainly not against for it.
Okay.
Not for it. But thank you, though.
Arthur, mm-hmm. Thank you. Arthur, who's next?
I'm William Payne. I live maybe 150 feet from this property. One of the things I heard tonight that very concerned about environmental issues here, mm-hmm. and they even was concerned about the site from Robinsonville Road, that they felt 175 foot. A buffer was needed between Robinsonville Road and the development for site issues. It's one minute.
Thank you.
So, my concern, as I said, I live right in this corner, so I observe Glove Creek. To me, it's the county has put it in an environmental sensitive area, and it has also been in agricultural land preservation agreement. It sort of galls me that tax money has been spent to preserve farmland, and now it's being not only built on housing, but being asked to build multiple housing on this land. So I'm opposed to this subdivision as a vessel property because of environmental issues. This property is within the environmental sensitive development area on Log Creek according to Sussex County plan. It is also subject to an agricultural land preservation program district agreement, to, I understood, was to March 29th, 2010. It's voted in February tonight. The inclusion of the above two programs shows how very, very vulnerable this land is in regards to the health of Love Creek. A great concern is also the wildlife that this area supports. Eagles, ospreys, kingfishers, white swan, blue heron, all types of ducks, geese, snowy egrets, great white herons, seagulls, terns, turtles, fish, crabs are seen routinely. I say routinely, my kitchen window where we sit, look out, looks right up the creek. We see them every morning. Not everything every morning, but let's watch it, the wildlife. 3 years ago, several people from our deck observed five eagles feeding in this Love Creek. And basically, I put the other map up. They have a photograph, number five. This points right out over the Love Creek in the area that I will be talking about. That's where the most of the activity occurs. During the past month, my wife and I have seen at least three ospreys fishing up there almost daily. Diving into Love Creek for their food. At times we've seen flocks of hundreds of seagulls feeding in this area. This creek is being fed by many springs. I believe this is why we have so much activity of wildlife feeding there. When there's ice along the edge of this in the wintertime, on the banks, you can see many small rivulets flowing towards the main creek, cutting their path through the ice. Sometimes these rivulets are as close as 20 feet apart, indicating many springs. There's also a major spring, I fear, that feeds this pond and cove here. This is borne out by the fact that in the wintertime, there's about a 75-foot diameter space up there that does not freeze. When the rest of the creek freezes over solid, enough for foxes and other things to run across. The creek would be impacted and affected by the drainage from the wastewater disposal fields, the runoff from the hard surfaces, such as the swimming pools around, clubhouse surfaces, parking spaces for these facilities, and the streets and lawns of the area of development. The wastewater field and the clubhouse are on the creek side of the development. We have very nice plans. The clubhouse and the wastewater are on the creek side of this whole development. And basically, the land flows, drains this way from about the center towards Love Creek and towards this little ravine, from what I see on their blueprint. The soil is very sandy. When I dug my basement, I have a basement in the area, it's beach sand. Now, I know within the development you do have layers of clay in certain areas. Just down our block, I know there's two or three lots that have clay rather than a beach sand. But it's very fast drainage. To get rid of the wastewater, it would be wonderful. So it would flow very fast through the soil from the waste field into the spring and right out into the creek, which is a couple of feet from this area. That's where the large spring is. Furthermore, the stormwater ponds are next to Robertsonville Road. Ah, to the front of the development. The drainage is this way and this way. None of that water is going to get to these stormwater ponds. They make a nice entrance feature, It makes the development very, very nice. Tidewater is building a treatment plant on 24. Just about where the three is. As they mentioned, it's 1.3 miles to the firehouse. Right next to the firehouse is where Tidewater is building the treatment plant. Which could be used for the wastewater from developments. But Sussex County has opened up all along Robinsonville Road, both sides of it. They have made this a development area in a sensitive area. The logical thing to me is not continue putting individual plants in a septic system. Pipe it down to a plant that would be built. It's ideal time to get stimulus money to put a farm truck line down to take care of this area. If it doesn't go to this plant, Sussex County's going to have to build a plant somewhere. It could be built and then later extended on to someplace else that the county wants to build. There was job creation. As I said, this plant could take care of all the homes on both sides of Robinson Road and between Robinson Road and Love Creek. Now, as I said, unless the county is building such a plant along the Robinson Road, Tidewater could do that. Since this land has been subject to the Agriculture Land Preservation Program, the site development work can really not begin until after March 2010 when that lease on the land is over. This site work, then site work would have to begin, and the housing itself would then, I know, building my own house, it takes more than a couple months. So therefore, the need for a treatment plant would be in 2011. Bruce Patrick of Tidewater, I spoke with him today, said this area is not within the surface area of Tidewater because Sussex County has reserved that area for their own to take care of the treatment plant. I haven't heard of any plants being built by the county recently. I don't expect them to be built for a while, even though they have made this a residential development area within a sensitive area. He said at the same time, even though it's not in this approved district for them, however, it would coincide with the same time frame as the development of the Tidewater plant along Route 24, thus being a logical way to process wastewater from the developments all along Love Creek and Robinsonville Road. I request that this development be denied in its present application and that you prudently protect Love Creek with a wide forested buffer zone as you did on the other side of Love Creek. As Sussex Council, not you, as Sussex Council did. On the other side of Love Creek is a retreat. They also had a swimming pool next to the creek, and Sussex County Council asked that pool to be moved back, the buffer widened to protect this sensitive Love Creek area. If you need a 175-foot buffer in the front just to protect the houses, what do you need to protect Love Creek, a sensitive area? Not a few feet from this lot 40 you was talking about. Right there on that pond. So even though the state did not require a traffic study for this project, I believe the county or the state should conduct a traffic study on the whole Robinsonville area. All of this is being considered for development. Many of them I've had surveyors in there working on all of this land to be developed. And this route, they're also considering a bypass from Route 1 to come from about 5 points here over to 24. They think that would divert the traffic off of 1 coming this way. I see they're going to go so far and shortcut. They're doing it now. They're using this road now to bypass the traffic on 24. If they put a bypass in, the people are not going to go all the way to 24. They're going to bypass it and come down Robinsonville Road to come out of the Angola Line. To me, the logical thing, bypass on 1, is to start at 5 and come all the way down to Long there, and then you could come both directions. But this is going to be, this is being used now. I've seen an increase of traffic on Robinsonville Road. More and more local people, as they find out about it, the traffic is getting heavier. So not only should the traffic study be for each individual site, but it should be for 100% build out of all the area that the council has approved for development along Robinsonville Road. I say that's both sides. They say Robinsonville Road, but I think you, all the properties on the other side are considered part of this development area that they are allowed to build houses. I think you might even need a four-lane road there in times. I thank you for letting me present this. There's a couple more items that came up during the talk on the plan itself. And I brought up ADA issues before on the other plan. I'm a caregiver. I'm advocating for handicap accessibility. Looking at the sidewalks here, I see a few crosswalks here. Most of the sidewalks are on both sides of the street where the houses are. Where the houses are not built or the side lot, I only see the sidewalk on one side and crosswalks. I do not see any curb ramps in the other areas that would be required. A lot of development I've seen in Sussex County have put rolled curbs in. Rolled curbs don't meet ADA accessibility. It was mentioned that there'd be a 5-foot sidewalk in the development. On the plans, I see 4-foot. ADA says every 200 foot, you need at least 5 foot for passing or turning to go around the other direction. Along the roadway, again, is this multiple-use path, which seems to be an 8-foot wide path for bicycling and all. I've seen a lot of developments recently putting the jogging path or what it is around the development, and it looks about maybe 6 or 8 foot wide, wider than a sidewalk and asphalt. But they built hills up and down and all around. Again, this along the main road is not what you need. This is should also be served as a sidewalk. So therefore, again, it needs to be a hard surface, poor slope, not greater than 2%, and a running slope, not greater than 1 to 12. Again, this is going to be a very heavily trafficked road, as the young lady spoke about. It's getting heavier all the time. So I believe that this should also be to the ADA standards, the sidewalk along the Robinsonville Road. Now, I notice only one end returns out to Robinsonville Road, the other end going towards, if this is north, it would be southeast. It just stops at the property line, as a lot of properties in Sussex County is happening. Big development goes in, 500,000 feet of sidewalk, and it stops at the property line. In fact, I've seen on 24, the development goes not only to stop at the property line, but there's a brick planter at the end. There's no way for a person in a wheelchair or scooter, if he wanted to go, to get back even to the highway to continue on, if he just wanted to get back into that development. The other thing I mentioned was the runoff that the pool and clubhouse, along with the wastewater disposal field, were both put to the back of the development. As I said before, the property across Love Creek, they asked them to move the pool away. Not only for the drainage and disturbing the riparian buffer, but the noise that it would disturb the wildlife there. Thank you very much. They show two other things before I leave. When I get started, I get excited.
Yeah, I know, and I'm going to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay.
I think you've covered
I will do that.
At least twice.
If I have another minute. Okay. The pool and clubhouse is being put in a forested area. You have farmland up front, which is going to reforest. That would be, to me, an ideal spot if you're going to have a development, not along the creek where the wildlife is, but up in an area that is not forested at this point. So also, there is a runoff from this land today. It doesn't have to be a hard rain, a couple of inches. We do get runoff from about where the pool area is over into Webb's Landing development from this property. And the other night, we had a 3.5-inch rain. And I can say, even with 1 or 2-inch rain, even though the soil is sandy like the beach, 1 or 2-inch rain, there's puddles in my driveway, which is just a gravel with seashells on top. I get puddles. It doesn't run off. And you get, even with the sandy soil. So if you're getting 3.5 or 5 inches of rain, we're getting a lot of drainage and runoff from those roads going into Love Creek and to our development. And thank you very much.
All right, sir. Well, thank you. For anyone else who would like to speak in opposition? Yes, sir.
My name's Daryl Robinette. I live in Webb's Landing across the street from Bill. I wanted to relay a couple of real life incidents here. This will build on Bill's point. This is my property right here, and Webb's Landing filters down around Love Creek. We built our house in 1997, and on two occasions, there's been flash flooding from this area. This is Roland Hill's Deerfield Farm. So the water exits onto his property, and then my house is right here. So it basically runs down my driveway across the street toward Bill. On both occasions, it came within 10 feet of my house. So your point earlier, I agree with. This is a very unique property. But my concern is we need to do the right engineering studies to analyze runoff. Bill's point about percolability, I have a wastewater treatment license, and he's right. This ground is very sandy. I mean, down at 2 or 3 or 4 feet, you have white beach sand. So, you know, the presence of a wastewater treatment effluent disposal area should be really considered in terms of the effect on Love Creek. But my major concern is this stormwater containment as it relates to how that property sets over there. I mean, has there been formal engineering studies to...
Excuse me, sir, you need to ask us.
Oh, I'm sorry. Has there been formal engineering studies to fully analyze that property?
I would tend to doubt it because typically they don't spend that kind of money until they know they have the opportunity to do a development. So that would definitely come later if it's even approved. But the point is, if it's not approved as a concept or as a preliminary, there wouldn't be a lot of cause for them to spend that kind of money.
Just to follow up on that, they'd have to get those approvals and have it engineered completely and approved by the Conservation District before they got their final site plan approval.
They couldn't do anything until they had all that anyway.
Until that's done. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, my wife works in insurance, and Webb's Landing is not in a flood zone. But I don't know if everybody realizes it, but a flash flood is not covered under insurance unless you have flood insurance. So you're putting this area over here in a situation where, you know, now you're taking on a bunch of more acreage with minimal containment. I mean, it appears to me like we're just diverting the water and letting it flow off where, you know, it wants to go. Because, you know, the pondage and stuff is very minimal. So that water is going to basically go where it wants to go.
No, it won't go where it wants to go. It'll go where it's engineered to go. So, I mean, I think your point's well taken, but the way the water is leaving that property now is not likely to be the way that it'll leave when that development's done because of the engineering that you spoke of that has to be done. So I know that's your fear that it's going to do that, but I just want to let you know that we're all aware of those kind of issues, and if this thing is approved, that'll have to be addressed. They can't dump their water on you.
Where on this property is the wastewater field relative to Love Creek?
I want to address that issue for a few. I can just hang on just for a second. And I'm going to ask the applicant, did I miss something along the way, or are we not? My understanding is that's really not what you're proposing to do, that you're proposing to connect to.
You didn't miss anything, but there is a hierarchy here.
I know.
It's in the county.
Yeah.
It is in the Love Creek study area of the Sussex County Engineering Department.
After the Angola Next study area.
Or the Angola Next area. Our first choice would be to have Sussex County Engineering Department serve it, but its closest plant will be at Hollyville Road. It's on 24, but further south.
Yeah, it's on the other side of 24.
And the County Engineering Department is not capable of serving this area. So the second choice in the hierarchy...
At this time, I would say, yeah.
Right. It's Tidewater Environmental Services, Inc., which has the Wandendale Wastewater Treatment Plant that was approved as a conditional use last year by the county and is currently going through the processes of getting a... can't think of the name of it. Coastal Zone App. Application is currently underway for the Wandendale plant. As soon as that process is completed, then Tidewater can get a CPCN for this site, and service will go from this site to the Wandendale Wastewater Treatment Plant. There will be no on-site wastewater treatment, septic fields, or central systems. If, and that is a big if Tidewater can't get the CPCN and can't get the CZA approved, then this site becomes the on-site system. But that's the third choice, not the first choice.
Well,
and the county engineering office has told both Mr. Ford and me and Mr. Daniels that they are going to waive their ability to serve in order to allow Tidewater to serve. And if you look at Mr. Davis's very fascinating and confused letter, you'll see in there references to regulated utility, certificated areas, and I think he's trying to get there, but he didn't get there well.
Okay, thank you. I will share this much with you, and I'm only one of five, and it would it is, and I believe it is possible for that. I'll ask you, counsel, if the commission did choose to approve this, we can approve it subject to being served by public sewer only. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I agree with you. I think as long as there's that much public sewer nearby, I don't know that we really need to have a third option. One of those two people will serve it soon. So.
Now, when you say public sewer, I guess, you know, Tidewater.
I'm talking about Tidewater or the county. I'm talking about a piped to a plant, not served on site, not an on site system. Now, I don't know what the other guys think right now, but that's sort of where I'm headed. But we'll see. Okay, but I understand your concern with that.
The only other point I wanted to make, I agree with the streets. That area, we basically purchased our home in that area because we like the lot size. There, we have an acre lot. We wanted to get out into the country where you enjoy that type of living. So I don't have anything against townhouses. Like, we moved down here from North Delaware. There's tons of them up there. But to me, once you get out on Robinsonville Road, you're not in Lewis, you're not in a town somewhere. And, you know, I think we have to be mindful of what the homeowners thought they were buying into when they bought there.
You know, that is probably the most difficult thing we deal with. If I had a dime for everybody that ever stood in front of me and said what you just said, I wouldn't be sitting here anymore. I'd be in my own condo somewhere, kicked back and living off of the several million dimes that I would have collected. And it is a very difficult issue. I empathize with you, and it's our, it is always a struggle to balance that against the property rights of others, you know. So I know what you mean. I mean, you have a lot of company.
That's all I have.
All right. Thank you. We thank you. Okay, who's next? Anyone else? Going once, twice?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
I haven't asked you yet.
I know you haven't.
Does anybody on the commission have any questions?
I do.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Johnson.
In the proposed conditions of approval, Mr. Schrader, there was reference to the when the amenities would be completed.
Yes, sir.
And that was at the, is my correct in that you're proposing that by the 50th permit?
You're looking at which set, sir?
Not the condition, not the multifamily one. Notice I changed from Sore Thumb to the multifamily.
Thank you.
Tab 11. Is this right before tab
12? Tab 11. There you go. I guess it's the page 6 of the conditions of approval. Was the 50th certificate?
Yes, sir.
And I would, am I correct in that if both the subdivision and the conditional use were approved, that would still apply?
Well, and the proposal was made by Mr. Ford that he talked about 50 as being the threshold upon which the amenities would be built. And I think the question that you're wanting to ask, Mr. Johnson, is if you approve both the multifamily dwelling and the single family dwelling, you would want the condition to be that it's 50 total of either type, single family dwelling or multifamily dwellings. And I think the answer is yes, we're looking at that to be the cumulative, not cumulative, but the combination of the two types.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
I'm good.
All right, then. There being no other questions, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of your Thursday evening to see if we make a decision. Or you may wish to call the office in the morning. And gentlemen, that completes our public hearings for the evening. Referring back to our first public